You're listening to the NetMums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
There's a reason for colic and we can get to the bottom of it. Is it because they're taking in air? Lots of babies now do have tongue tie, or we're recognising them more potentially. Lots of babies do have unsettled tummies. You know, would they benefit from some probiotics or looking at diet and things like that? So much of newborn sleep is caught up in how comfortable they are. But this is stuff that probably when you had your babies, no one really was talking about. Maybe we didn't know enough about it. I certainly didn't get trained in it 10 plus years ago. It's stuff that I have had to learn myself and through my journey with my own three children.
But before all of that...
This episode of the NetMums podcast is brought to you by Johnson's Baby, the family favourite brand that's gentle on baby's skin.
I'm a big fan of their products, especially their bedtime range. The Johnson's bedtime routine consists of a bath, massage and quiet time. It's been tested on babies aged 7 months and older for a week or more, and it's clinically proven to help babies and toddlers fall asleep faster and stay asleep longer.
Oh, amazing. I could definitely do some of that in my house. I'm heading to Boots, where you can save a third on the Johnson's bedtime range until 23rd of April, subject to availability. Johnson's bedtime routine consists of a bath, massage and quiet time, tested on babies 7 months and older for 1 week or more. Welcome to a special bonus episode of the NetMums podcast. Now, before we introduce our guest, how's your week been, Wendy?
It's been a bit emotional, if I'm honest.
Oh, no.
I'm managing two small people with very big, very different emotions. One's a preteen who's feeling all the feels about preteen, and one is eight who's feeling all the feels about being eight. And it's a real drain on my emotion bank. I'd love to know if mums of boys have the same drain. Or do you get this with your girls, Alison?
Yeah, I mean, I can't answer the boy question, but yeah, it's actually quite tricky having the kind of different ages because you've got to handle them quite differently. Obviously, my 13-year-old, you know, need to kind of sit down and have little chats with her. One of my 5-year-olds yesterday, she was feeling so many emotions inside, like frustration and anger. She started walloping her twin sister and then purposefully like going up and grabbing drawings that she's done and ripping them up in front of her face. Like, it's clearly in her head, she's thinking, I'm angry, so I'm going to make you angry too. And I'm like, I don't know what to do other than physically restrain her to stop her from walloping her sister. I'm like, I don't know how to handle this. It's hard, isn't it?
Maybe the twin thing as well, because when you've got a twin, you've got that constant backdrop of, you know, that they're always there for you. So
exactly.
You can take it out on them.
Exactly. So, oh my goodness. It's a lot, isn't it?
It is. Let's talk to our guest. I hope she's not an expert in teenage girls, but you never know. She might have some advice.
Luckily, she's an expert in parenting, because today we are chatting to the award-winning parenting and baby sleep expert, Heidi Scudder. A former nanny and maternity nurse, Heidi has worked with thousands of babies globally to sleep successfully, including celebrity clients Perry Edwards, Chloe Madeley, Stacey Solomon and Binky Felstead. She's got a top podcast, The Parent and Baby Sleep Coach. She holds webinars, parenting workshops, and her book, Your Positive Baby Sleep Book, is out this week. Heidi, a warm welcome to the NetMums podcast.
Thank you for having me. That sounds lovely, that intro.
It's always nice, isn't it, to hear all of your accolades and achievements in one handy paragraph.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. Thank you.
So as a parenting coach, Heidi, do you feel that kind of like pressure to be the perfect parent? You know, if one of your kids goes batshit in Tesco, are you like, oh my God, do you feel really self-conscious?
I do, yeah. I think it's really, really hard. A, parenting full stop, and this whole sort of gentle parenting movement, which I think is brilliant, like this whole positive parenting, reparenting ourselves, amazing. But the pressure to do that as a parent in this generation, I think, is incredibly hard. Add on that I have a very large social media following where I do share my parenting journey and my life. And I'm often saying to my husband, like, can you just not shout because she might know me? So, yes, I do feel the pressure. But actually, I just did a reel yesterday, actually, about sort of not needing to be that gentle parent 100% of the time and how important that is. Because I think with social media as it is today, it feels like we should be, and we're looking everywhere and there's tips everywhere. And, you know, we put tips out, we're part of that. But I want everyone to know that actually doing your best as and where possible rather than 100% of the time is such an important message.
Oh, it is. We spoke to Joe Wicks actually on the last season, and he was telling us how he really tries gentle parent, but if he gets it wrong, he just apologises, and that's okay.
Exactly. And actually, it's really, really good for our children to see us getting things wrong and apologise.
That's comforting.
I don't know about
good. It.
Yeah, yeah.
I see that quite a lot.
I know we're sort of talking about the baby stuff, but at the same time, I have a 4 and 6 year old, and the most powerful thing is when they then come to me and say, "Mommy, I'm really sorry, I threw that toy across the kitchen. I didn't mean to. I was feeling angry." And I just think, wow, like how different is that compared to how I was brought up? It's just, it blows my mind sometimes.
Yeah. I bet you get loads of friends and family asking you for advice. I mean, I know I would. Like if you were one of my school mum friends, I would always be like, "Heidi, what do I do in this situation?"
It's really hard with friends, actually. I actually take a step back and I say to them when they have their babies, "I'm here if you need me. This is what I can do for you. But I'm not going to kind of lecture or keep checking in and ask how the sleep is going. You come to me." Because I think, I'm sure we can come onto this, but a lot of people want to find their own journey. And the last thing they want is like a baby sleep expert sticking their nose in and going, "Well, you could do it this way."
Also, you'd be like, "Also, like, I'm sending you an invoice for every time I do check in. You can pay me."
Yeah, and do you know what? It's really hard as well, because when you are just doing the old check-in on WhatsApp. So with our clients, we do a whole hour consultation and ask a million questions. So if you've then got a friend going, "Oh, she's waking early. What do you think I can do?" I'm like, "Okay, where do we start?" And I'll try and give a bit of advice, but inevitably it won't work because I don't know the full backstory. So then it looks like it's not working for a friend. So it's really hard actually with friends. Yeah. I find better to take a back seat.
So you've been in the parenting game, as in working in parenting, not being a parent, for about 15 years. What are the main changes in attitude and advice you've seen over that time?
A great question. So we've obviously got the kind of gentle parenting side of things, so that's all the behaviour stuff. In sleep, so when I first trained, I mean, yeah, I've literally been in childcare for 20 years, but when I first trained in sleep training, as it was back then, it was a very basic course, and it was pretty much, if I'm honest, leave your baby to cry. That's how you do it.
Yeah.
I was actually talking to friends about this weekend. If they're sick, that's fine. Like, it blows my mind, really. And it was all very Gina Ford, which is fine, you know, like lots of people do still.
Well,
like
my eldest is nearly 13, and we'll come on to this. We had absolute sleep disasters, and that was the only advice pretty much that I could find at the time. Leave her to cry. And I can tell you now it didn't work.
just, you know, strict routine. So the very famous kind of by 8:15, if they've not napped and you've not had your toast, then epic fail on your
so
part.
So stressful,
it was awful.
You know, don't get me wrong. And the thing with my book that I really am really, really proud of is that I have different options for different parents, because some people do love a routine and they want control and they've had a big job and managed loads of people and then they have a baby and go, "Oh my God, what's going on?" And they need that level of sort of routine and control to their day. But for other people, that completely freaks them out. And what I've really tried to do in the book is have something for everyone. So what I'm kind of saying is it's a book that works for every baby, because it literally does. You can do the routine, but you can also not do the routine and still have a really happy sleeper.
I think that's what I really like about your advice, Heidi, and also the book. It's, you know, you said that there's not one correct way to bring up a baby or a child, and it can feel so often like there's just so much noise, especially on social media, you know, telling us how to do it and try this, and it can just feel so overwhelming. So like, how do we work out who to listen to and who to filter out?
It's so hard. And even, you know, like 15 years at Kay doing the sleep stuff, in the last 18 months to 2 years, social media and baby sleep, wow.
It's a lot.
Like, honestly, it almost makes me not want to be in it. It's very difficult for new parents. So forgetting like who's at who and whatever else and different approaches, as a new parent, to be on social media, to be scrolling at 3 a.m. when you're doing a night feed, and to be seeing people going, it's normal for babies to wake up for 5 years, don't do anything, for other people to be like, that's not okay. It's just...
But that was about 12 years ago. I was doing that 12 years ago thinking, oh my God, what should... Because you're desperate, aren't you, at 4 a.m? You're desperate for someone to just mix it.
Yeah, and also we know, like, what sells and the content that does well, of course, is, like, cancel culture, calling other people out, that kind of thing, which has then made it become really... I just find it quite negative, actually, at times.
It's very divisive, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Super divisive. And think about being a new mum and trying to work out, like, oh, am I going to work on a routine or settling, or am I not? Like, that is just, in itself, like, extremely difficult. So my biggest thing is usual gut. Gut for babies is a different story, but gut as an adult, as a parent, and just sit for a few minutes, and I talk about this in the book, and just say, what do I want to do? Like, what feels good for me? Because if you're seeing everywhere that babies just don't sleep and that's how they are, but you're struggling and your mental health is struggling and you feel like you want a routine or you want a baby who sleeps better, that's okay. Like, we can get
God, I feel a bit emotional. I wish I'd known you 12 years ago. It's such a biggie. Baby sleep is so huge and it can make or break that early parenting experience, can't it? It certainly broke mine. And
100%. Yeah, exactly. And I think what's really, really hard now, so going back to, we just used to be told leave them to cry, now we know so much more. So I've got, like, all the middle section, which is like stuff that's just not in other books. It talks about tongue tie, it talks about air intake, winding babies, it talks about babies' tummies, how they react to foods that pass through breast milk. There is so much to baby sleep that we're not being told, or we don't know, or your midwife won't tell you, and things like that. And actually, it's uncovering all of those things, because if you can have a baby who's comfortable, then they will sleep. So it's not just about leaving them to cry.
That's so interesting. So what are the main things then that you think we're not being told about sleep? So you just mentioned a few of them. Are there any more? Being a parent can be hard at times, especially when we have a million and one things to do. So it's important to slow down and cherish moments with your baby.
That's why I love Johnson's baby. For the last 125 years, they've been a part of those special moments, whether it's a chaotic or calming bath time or the bedtime routine that helps my baby sleep.
And you just can't beat the smell of Johnson's baby. Mmm, that baby smell. They've recently released an amazing docuseries called A Parent is Born, following the lives of 8 families as they begin their parenting journey. You can catch the first 3 episodes now on johnsonsbaby.co.uk.
It's an emotional roller coaster to watch, but so worth it. Now, back to our guest for more tips on bedtime and baby sleep.
So obviously there's a lot of talk at the moment about, like, our diets and processed food and whatever else. And I think what we're potentially seeing is, therefore, our babies have unhappier guts as a consequence of our guts not being in such a great place, which is having a knock-on effect. Obviously, like, lots of babies with things like reflux or food intolerances, allergies, sensitivities, whichever it is. And that in itself, if you have a baby who's unsettled and crying and not sleeping, you just naturally think, and your mother-in-law will tell you, leave them to cry. But actually, it's their comfort levels. So what we work really hard to do is get to the bottom, the holistic bottom of what's actually happening with the baby. Don't just go, oh, they've got colic, it'll go by 12 weeks. Like, how useless is that statement for any mum, dad who's struggling?
Yeah.
And screaming, you know, I had a client last week screaming from 4 till 8 p.m., every night of the week, and they've just been told by 12 weeks it will go.
Oh.
I'm like, no, guys, listen, colic, there's a reason for colic, and we can get to the bottom of it. Is it because they're taking in air? Lots of babies now do have tongue tie, or we're recognising more potentially. Lots of babies do have unsettled tummies. You know, would they benefit from some probiotics or looking at diet and things like that? So much of newborn sleep is caught up in how comfortable they are. But this is stuff that probably when you had your babies, no one really was talking about. Maybe we didn't know enough about it. I certainly didn't get trained in it 10 plus years ago. It's stuff that I have had to learn myself and through my journey with my own 3 children.
I wanted to take you back to reflux, actually, because you just said there reflux was a silent reflux was a huge problem for my eldest daughter. And it took months of arguing with people to get any help with that at all. Can you just help anyone listening with the things to look out for and what they can do to address it, because I think refluxes can be so hard for parents to manage.
Yeah, really hard. I would say most of reflux goes unnoticed as well. You've got obvious reflux where your baby is bringing up milk and you can see. But a lot of parents look for that and they think, well, if they're not being sick, then they don't.
Exactly. And we had the opposite. She was never sick, but she was in agony.
So silent reflux, yeah. And silent reflux is often the worst, especially for sleep, because it is silent. So you go, well, they're fine. So therefore, if they're fine, why won't they sleep? And you must, you know, it must be because I held them too much or whatever else, or I've spoiled them. But no, it's not any of those things. It's the fact that if you go to put them on their back, lie them down, the regurgitation happens, and that's when they're most uncomfortable. So they're quite often the babies who will look like bad sleepers. I say bad lightly, as in that's what people are told, or you've just got a bad sleep, or you're just unlucky, or it's just genetics, or they're just really low sleep needs. When actually, I would say a good 90% of those babies have silent reflux, but it's just not recognised. So that's really important. There's a whole page of symptoms. We've got over like 40 symptoms, I think it is, or 30, in the book of what to look out for. And then it's, for me, it's knowledge is power. So now I know, okay, my baby is showing some of those symptoms, I can then decide what to do. And it obviously have baby checked by a doctor, but to be honest with you, it's not always a medical issue. It's often like change in positioning, latch-wise, taking in air, have they got a tongue tie? And if you go to the doctor and look for a tongue tie, they're gonna say, no, there's not a tongue tie, because they're mostly not trained to look for them, right? So we've got to find the right people in what we call our village. And that's what we're trying to do, signpost you to a really good tongue tie practitioner. Have a look at that, check there's no air intake, because obviously if you swallow air, milk sits on top of it, every time the air comes up, the milk's going to come up in the esophagus too. So it's about doing a bit of troubleshooting. It's not a straightforward process, unfortunately, because we still understand, or the NHS often still understands reflux as just a baby who's sick or losing weight. And as I'm sure you experienced, like, it's actually often not those things. They can be gaining weight, not being sick, but actually still be really uncomfortable.
Now, you mentioned routines already, and, you know, some parents are very pro-routine, some are very anti-routine. I find that, especially when I had my twins, I was like, I need a routine just to cling on to, something, some sort of framework to stop me from going absolutely insane. But baby sleep patterns in themselves fluctuate so much, don't they, in the first year, which can make it hard whether you're in a routine or not. What's the best way of kind of adapting and working out what to do when your baby's sleep patterns change?
Yeah, so quite often you'll be like, right, I've nailed their routine, they're, I don't know, 4 months, and they're going through with one night feed, whatever it is, and then you'll hit what I call a bit of a blip, okay, a bump in the road. Generally speaking, it's quite simple. Normally it's a tweak to their kind of daytime routine, so do they need to drop a nap or not, maybe they need longer awake time before bed, that kind of thing. We also check on, you know, are they teething? My one-year-old is teething. This weekend was seriously intense, like, wow, the crying, the night waking, it's hard. Illness, so quite often sleep will go off track before illness becomes obvious. So I have lots of clients come to me and they're like, it's been 4 nights and their sleep is really broken. And I'll go, just give it a week and tell me in a week's time if they have become unwell. And I had an email this morning going, oh my gosh, can't believe it. It's so odd. Like, yeah, 2 nights after we spoke, it became really obvious because his symptoms came, like he had a temperature sore throat, whatever. So it can go off track. And then we can have things like, you know, they learn to stand. So all of a sudden they want to stand at 5 a.m. rather than sleep at 5 a.m. Sleep regressions are, for me, like, they're not really set periods of time. Like, it doesn't, not every baby has a 6 month, an 8 month, and a 12 month regression. If you want to look for them, you will see it, right? So I don't think we need to wait out for them. We just need to go, if something happens and they start waking, there is a reason. They don't just learn to not sleep all of a sudden. It's not like they have to, you know, oh, just leave them to cry because they've suddenly learned not to sleep. There'll be something going on, but it'll take you a week or so to work it out. Probably by the time you've worked it out, they'll be sleeping again anyway, right? So I think it's good to know that sleep is not kind of linear and there will be ups and downs, but the majority of the time, if you want to have it, you can have consistency.
So what do you suggest if I, as a parent, because my daughter didn't sleep, I became obsessed with sleep. And then I became obsessed with naps, and then I became obsessed with times. And I still, like, I've got a bit of PTSD about it. If my 8-year-old doesn't sleep now, I still get a bit like, what's going on? What's wrong? So what do you say to those parents? Because it really is hard not to become obsessed with sleep when you're not getting any.
Yeah, I think it's really, really hard. And I think we need to touch on the mental health element to sleep, right? So we have what kind of one group of babies maybe where they are textbook, they will just follow a routine, sleep kind of is easy for them. I don't see many of those babies, obviously, for obvious reasons I'm troubleshooting. I see a lot of babies who sleep is very difficult for them for underlying reasons. So if I'd have known you, Wendy, back then, I'd have been like, let's look at why nothing you're doing is really working and happening. And that's what's adding to your anxiety. It's like, well, it's working for everyone else, so why is it not working for me?
Exactly. Right. And everyone says, well, I did this and it worked for me. So you try it and it doesn't work. And then there's all sorts of other complex emotions caught up in that as well.
And you feel like, what am I doing wrong? You feel like a failure. I think it's really important that we know if your baby's not sleeping, it's not a reflection on you, your parenting, what you've tried. I have a lot of people come and they've tried different books, courses, whatever, but the reason it's not working is because those underlying root causes, those issues underlying, are not addressed. Like for your baby, that silent reflux. So yeah, it does kind of make you feel a bit sad, obviously, that you had that journey. What I would say now though is, if you feel like you're starting to get anxiety around sleep, perfect nap times, you know, sleeping through the night, whatever it is, sometimes actually, do you know what the best thing to do is? Just to step back and accept that this is where we are right now, and I'm not going to keep trying 10 different things, 15 different things, whatever it is every week. I'm just going to go, my baby is my baby right now. They need me for whatever reason in the night, whether it's reflux, tongue tie, whatever, and almost like that piece of acceptance around this is how it is and I'm okay with that, rather than constantly trying to find the next solution. It's really hard because, like I said, there's so much that you can do. So I do encourage people to look for root causes, but I also do acknowledge short naps is one of these things. So those clients who only ever get 30-minute naps, they're like, my baby only naps for 30 minutes. We try a few different things, but sometimes the most powerful thing to do is say, what would it feel like if we just said this is just what their sleep is like right now? Yeah, you don't need to keep trying things, changing things, actually just accepting. And that can be really powerful on an anxiety level.
Yeah. Now, I remember when I was in strict routines with my twins when they were younger, how important the ritual of bath before bed was. Like, I just feel like it was... Do you know what? It was as much part of, again, keeping my sanity in check, knowing that this was almost like a cue to my brain that bedtime was coming and it was going to be the end of the day and I could sit down on the sofa and watch something trashy on TV. But it is, you know, it is important to so many parents. Is that something that you recommend, having that bath time routine?
Yeah, so if the baby obviously has like really sensitive skin or whatever else, then we wouldn't do bath time every night when they're very little. But that idea of some sort of routine, like that is one of there's a lot of baby sleep that's kind of anecdotal or just opinion, but that bedtime routine is quite heavily backed in by research, sorry. So yes, ultimately, some sort of routine to your bedtime. It could be baby massage instead of a bath. Like if you've got a little one with eczema that flares up and they don't enjoy bath time, but that kind of set of steps, that sequence of events in the run up to bedtime, really powerful, like for any child. Oh, sorry about that. Baby or toddler.
So can we also talk a little bit about the fourth trimester? In your book, you emphasise the importance of post-birth recovery. And again, it's really interesting talking to you 12 years down the line, because 5 days after my oldest was born, I was in blue water. No joke. I'd had a cesarean. I was in blue water because I thought that I had, if you were up and you were out, it proved that you were coping and you were doing it. And now there's so much talk out there about 5 days in bed, 5 days on the bed, 5 days around the bed. Oh, I wish someone had told me that. So what do you say to the mums who are, there is still societal pressure to bounce back. What do you say to those who are idiots like Wendy and in blue water?
I did the same though. That was only my eldest 6 years.
Yeah, so that's old. Only 6 years.
Yeah, I was like on the, you know, up and about and put makeup on and went for lunch and stuff. My thing now is take your time. So I did research for the book, and some cultures, they literally close their doors to anyone coming into their house for like up to 40 days, some even longer. And meanwhile, we're like, cool, let's go shopping day five. You know, it's so hard because we don't have, often lots of us don't have family around. So it's really hard not to do anything. Like, you might have to pop to the shops and whatever else. But what I really focus on is don't worry about routines, don't worry about bad habits, sleep, whatever. It's all about you and your birth recovery. So I love that kind of theory of like a week in bed, a week on the sofa. I did that with my second, and the difference it made, I also think to our bond, not just my recovery, was massive. Had way more energy. And I think just if we can, and obviously it's hard because not everyone has a partner or whatever, has family around, but if you can take your time, like, you never get that time back. And there's never, to be honest, really another reason to just sit on the sofa, is there? You know, like, life is so fast paced. If you can just take those, at least those first few weeks, if not longer, to bond with your baby, to establish feeding and to recover. Like, birth can be really traumatic for a lot of people. Just being kind, because life is so fast paced, and we need to just come back to ourselves and just again check into our gut instinct. Like, what do we need right now? Do we really need to see our best friend from uni, or, you know, even like a mother-in-law, right? So I wasn't very popular the second time around because I made rules around
business. People get cross with you, right? Well, we haven't been invited to meet baby yet. And it's like, so you cave to that pressure of all these people who want to come and meet your baby, when actually then you're the one making tea, finding biscuits, making sure the house is clean.
And it's not until you've had a baby, is it, that you realise, like, for a lot of my friends, if I go and see them, I'll take a load of cook meals, ready meals, yeah, whatever. I'll take food, because, you know, the one thing you need, apart from obviously love and attention,
decent food.
Yeah, and you need to eat.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, you're so right. It makes me so cross when I think about it. Only it's so hard when it's about something that is so beautiful, like, you know, a grandmother, a grandparent meeting their grandchild for the first time. It's really hard to be cross about it, but I can feel it. Now, Heidi, you've got a whole section in your book dedicated to whether we can spoil our babies with contact and cuddles. I find it so fascinating. Tell us your view on that.
Yeah, so we kind of just touched on it, but ultimately the answer is no. Okay, you can't spoil a baby. So I think where this comes from is that issue with that kind of black and white opinion, which has kind of come recently, even more so from social media, obviously. Like, yes, put them down from day one, or no, hold them the whole time, and all this attachment parenting, they have to be like glued to you all the time. Both of those extremes are incredibly overwhelming. Like, to think that you've got to strap your baby to you and just have a couple of months of, like, literally not having any time to yourself, it's blooming hard. But also to think, oh, I've got to put them down, I can't cuddle them, that's extremely stressful too.
I love that. Don't talk in extremes, because that's what commentary on parenting seems to make people do, is, well, you must do this. No, 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 you must do that. There's no kind of shades of grey in the middle of this.
Yeah. And I really focus in on, for me, it's really about recovering, doing what your gut says, like, cuddle your baby. I cuddled all of my babies, not so much my first. I think his birth was quite traumatic and we had loads of stuff going on and it was just different. But with my second, with my third, I leaned into it more. I was like, I can do these cuddles, because I also know that by 3-4 months, if I do what I call practice naps, low pressure practice naps, where once a day I just practice putting them down, if I do a bit of both, by the end of it, I'll have a great sleeper, but I also won't look back and regret it, because I did cuddle them as much as I want or need to. So I think it's empowering, isn't it, to know that you can do both and you don't have to choose. And I think we're like told to be, you have to do this or you have to do that, and actually you can do a bit of everything.
Now, you might struggle with this last question, Heidi, because I think possibly there isn't one thing that you can advise people, but it might, you might say something about what you, listening to your gut again, I get the impression. So if someone listening now is struggling with baby sleep, other than buy my book, what is your one piece of advice to them, please?
I would say, yeah, I mean, go with your gut. I'll put that to the side because I've talked about that a lot. I would say, think about what's actually going on for your baby. Okay, so struggling with sleep in those first 3 to 4 months, they come out knowing how to sleep. They don't not know how to sleep. So if they're struggling with sleep, be curious as to what else might be going on for them. Okay, it might be really simple, an awake window tweak or winding them more, but it could also be, in your experience, Wendy, inside a reflux and no one's really listening to you. So just be curious and make sure that you really do kind of think about the full picture rather than just thinking, oh, well, I've got a baby that doesn't sleep and that's just kind of how they are.
That's really good advice.
Heidi, you're marvellous. Thank you. I wish I'd moved you.
We all need Heidi.
Can you just clone yourself, please, for all the mums and dads? Thank you for joining us.
Heidi, thank you so much. It's been so brilliant to chat to you.
Thank you so much for having me.